On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, how to navigate your Ironman training around your work and family, race time expectations, the truth behind high cadence drills on the bike, how to train for hills when you don't live near hills for running and cycling, and how to add strength training to your tri-training program and where you might see the benefits. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now.
Are you listening? Damn.
We begin with Damien, who's a new member in the T2 Endurance Group on Facebook. He says, "Hi there, I'm from Lincolnshire, UK," and he signed up for his first full distance Ironman, and that's going to be happening in June of this year. And he's looking for advice, like we all do, on how to work your training plan around work and family. And this is the holy grail of being a successful triathlete, right? Is how to do that and not piss off your family and have a healthy life and be successful when it comes to race day. So what are some things that come to mind, Wendy?
Well, first off, I think everyone who has work and family is always trying to balance their training around it. So the most important thing when it comes to training is that you fit training around your other life priorities, such as work and family, and don't try to fit your life and family around your training plan. So if you are following a plan or you have a coach and something's not working in your training, that you're finding that you're not able to get in a certain number of days a week or a certain volume because you have other obligations with family and work, then you need to communicate that with your coach or you need to find a different training plan. Some people purchase training plans like we sell on Training Peaks as well as other plans that they think is going to fit. And some people get really excited when they see high volume plans and they're like, okay, this is what I want to do. And then they realize it's just too much for them. And so it's important to find that plan. And it's also important to know how to adjust and make modifications. You may have good intentions to get that workout in for the day. And then your kid gets sick, or you have to stay late or go in early for work. Mm-hmm. So having the knowledge and the background to know to say, okay, I had an hour workout planned and it's okay to just do 30 minutes if you only have 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to not do that intensity of that key workout on Tuesday, move it to Wednesday or Thursday, you know? So having the flexibility and the knowledge to know that it's okay to adjust workouts and adapt when you have life and family obligations. And that's something that we actually talk about in the training plans that we sell on Training Peaks. We have our weekly or monthly videos, and we talk about how to best reorganize the plan to kind of help fit your schedule.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for both of us, I'm sure, is to recall what it was like training for the first full distance. And there's a lot of things you just don't know. And you're scared, if I don't do this workout, what does it mean? You don't know what you don't know. And I got this plan. Right. I've got to go so many hours. What if I don't? Will I finish? And so there's a lot of, I guess, fear of the unknowns for someone like Damien, who's doing his first full in less than 6 months.
And something that we've talked about, you know, again, depending on what he means by family, I'm assuming he has kids. Maybe the kids are old enough. A lot of triathletes will have their kids ride the bikes while they're running. Mm-hmm. So they're doing their activity together. Or you take your kids to the gym, so you get them involved in an activity of some sort at the gym you go to while you're doing your training. While their kids are in swim lessons, they're getting their swim workout in. Or while their kids are, you know, at their softball or baseball, they're getting their run in. And so trying to manage the training around other kid activities, if that's the problem or if that's the situation. And as much as athletes don't always like it, getting up at 4 a.m. trying to get your workout in while the kids and the spouse are sleeping. That's probably the number one thing that I hear other athletes doing is the early morning workouts. So when they get off work, mm-hmm. they can come home and be with family instead of trying to squeeze that late night workout in when they haven't seen their family all day because they've been at work. So it definitely depends on the situation, the work schedule, and what type of family, kids, ages, and all that.
Yeah, it's so overwhelming when you first think that not only do you have to do the 140.6 miles, but I got to get up early and swim on this day. And you can see your schedule for the full week going, oh my gosh, I've got so many hours that I have to exercise and then go to work and then hopefully not be tired and be present. And I like what you said here, and I do this too. I've done this, is where you backfill your schedule with your workouts. So, you know, your family, work, and then you place in your workouts. Where can they best fit the life to where it doesn't interrupt too much, and you have good communication with your spouse and your family. Like, hey, this is when mom or dad is planning to do this. So, you know, in a way, respect their time that they right. are setting aside. You know, they got to be on the bike for 4 hours. Let them be. Don't interrupt. Don't make them feel guilty. And yeah, there's some things that if you're a non-triathlete, it's your first time, you're maybe wondering if you're the spouse or the partner, like, why are you having to do so much exercise, or why you're always doing this? You know, you got to put in the miles. You got to put in the base. So it can be tough if they don't understand what you're trying to do.
Accomplish. And that's definitely the communication with the family and your boss. Mm-hmm. And knowing that the main thing, especially your first Ironman, is you should be going to finish. And so the key workouts to finish become that long ride, that long run, which are generally on the weekends for most people. Mm-hmm. And so if you have to skip a shorter workout during the week, don't sweat it. Just let it go and just try to prioritize the longer rides, the longer runs. Something you can do is, you know, if you have a trainer or a treadmill, you can do half your run indoors at home when you're at home with the family, and then you can do half your ride outdoors, or split it up in some way. Maybe you have to do, you know, maybe speaking of that 4 hour ride, you have to do a couple hours in the morning before the kids wake up, and a couple hours in the evening when they go to bed. And so there's definitely a lot of options, and the communication comes into play with your family, as well as if you have a coach that's giving you these workouts, making sure you're communicating with them about what's working and what's not.
Yeah. And your goal is to finish the race as your first, which kind of ties into the next question from Keith here. He purchased our beginner Olympic plan on Training Peaks. He's training for something called the Half Moon Bay Olympic on April 10th. This is going to be his first Olympic distance. He did a sprint a couple of years ago. He did pretty good, he said. Now, because of the increase in distance, he wanted to take a much more systematic approach to his training and technique development. He says he really likes our program because it has both of those, and he especially likes the videos that we have. So thank you, Keith. We put a lot of time into that. Currently, I would assess myself as having a decent baseline fitness level, with the caveat of having some excess holiday pounds on you. You're not alone, Keith. What would be a good goal for a finishing time? And I know it's a one-word answer from you, isn't it?
It just depends.
It depends.
You know, that word good is so subjective. What might be good for you might not be good for someone else. And, you know, let's generalize here. A good time is, number one, whatever time it takes you to finish, where you're mentally and physically feeling that you pushed yourself to your limits, but you survived and you still feel really good and you can finish with your arms up and a smile on your face. That's a good finish. But regarding time, and I had followed up with Keith on this question about really what good meant to him, you know, regarding the finish time, is it just depends on your background and what your current fitness is. When I'm talking about current fitness, I'm talking about what your current time it takes you to bike, you know, a 40K or run a 10K or swim 1.5K, or you go back to your sprint. What is your best time for a 5K, a 20K, and a half mile swim? And so, you know, based on those assessments, those previous times, what was good for you then you want to kind of make sure you're training within that current fitness and not try to train where you want to be. So Keith actually just responded to me today, and he told me a little bit of background about his paces. He can bike 18 miles an hour. His 5K run time is about an 8.5 minute mile. And so based on that, you don't want to train to run a 7 minute mile right now when your best 5K is at an 8.5 minute mile. So you start to set some realistic goals for you, because what's good for you is good for you. So maybe you set a goal that you want to be running a 5K at maybe an 8 or an 8:15 per mile pace. That's a lot faster than what you're doing now. Maybe you want a bike, you want to go from 18 miles an hour up to 19 or 20 miles an hour. So you want to make sure that training plan is fit, and you're training at the right intensity zones, whatever you want to call it, based on your current fitness, and continue to progress with distance and intensity to help you get closer to your time goal, which is always going to be limited by what the day brings weather-wise, and how your nutrition is, how your sleep is. So there's just a lot of factors involved in trying to be good.
And with some of the programs, and I forget this one exactly, is the baseline testing you do for the swim, the bike, and the run to know what these times are. So as you're getting through the program, and he's still got, you know, a few months to go, he should have an idea, and anyone would have an idea, what's a realistic, quote, good time based on your training at the moment. Where, what, like, you know, what did I do? Would you look at your training log? How have I been doing my 5 mile runs or my six, you know, whatever, 20 mile bike rides? What's my average been? And then you can probably do the math yourself and go, okay, I can only finish based on what I train like. You're never going to race faster than you train. It just doesn't happen. You train, and whatever those training times are is the best case scenario for the race. You'll know as you get closer.
Right, and that's why you train, to give you that mental and physical confidence to know race day, and that preparation to know race day what you're capable of doing. I mean, like I already mentioned, the weather could get in your way, nutrition can get in your way, sleep can get in your way, you can get sick or injured. Mm-hmm. There's those factors involved, but based on what happens in those 12 weeks leading up to your race, you should have a pretty good idea, because you kept a training log. There's so many benefits to keeping a training log, because you trained according to the intensity, the details that were suggested for that day, that you know what you're going to do, and knowing what you're going to do is going to be good. You may not do what you did years and years and years ago, but let's you know, do what you're capable of doing in the moment with this phase of training and this plan that you're following.
What I'll do is just do a goal time for each of the three disciplines, because the transitions are a variable. The weather's a variable, but if you just do that, and then you have goals within your race.
Yeah.
So what's a good goal for your bike? You're hoping to go 18 and a half miles per hour or 20 miles per hour on the best case scenario. If you don't accomplish it, you still have the run to try to PR in or do what your goal was. So you got these steps along the way as you're looking, whether you're riding on your arm, on your bike, somewhere like, okay, I was hoping to average a 140 in the swim. Didn't quite get that. All right, let's go into transition. Let's stretch out a little bit. Let's relax. Okay, get in the bike. All right, here's my goal. Let's see how the day, how it progresses, how the bike progresses. Okay, I can reach it. Okay, I got it. Sweet, I got a little success here. All right, let's build this momentum, carry it into transition to have a good transition, get hydration. Okay, let's do the run now. And then you can even break up the run into your, you know, every 2 miles and find little successes within each element of the race. So a good finish time, I say throw it out the window because too many other factors and variables, but maybe break it down by, did I do well in the swim, in the bike, in the run, and then assess after it's over.
Yes, I love that. That was a really good way to break it down. And then I want to just add, as you're doing your assessment, let's say you didn't reach any of your goal times. It's really important to assess not only what happened race day as far as, you know, wind and your nutrition, weather, wind has to go with weather, is looking back at your training log and being honest with yourself. Mm. Were there days, did you follow it exactly as planned? No one ever follows their program exactly as planned. I'm happy if an athlete can get, you know, 80% of it done within the big picture of things. But you really want to be honest with yourself. Did you give it all you had? Did you train as best as you could? And based on that training, did the results now make sense based on your training? And never get down about yourself. Don't use this as, a sign of self-worth of anything. If you perform under what you thought you were capable of performing, use it as a learning experience, and hopefully that'll drive you to do it again. You know, maybe follow the same plan again. And just kind of what drives me is those quote unquote failures that I learn from. I love to fail because it's a learning opportunity for me. Mm. And these failures actually drive me to keep going further or to keep going faster and to set all these goals that I've been doing for 30 years.
Yeah.
Still trying to figure it out.
It's a moving target, right? We're always trying to figure it out. This question from David, I love the cadence drills in the details of your bike workouts. How does high cadence, or what does high cadence do? Build strength or endurance?
This is a great question, especially for someone who's new, who's not really familiar with pedaling technique or when I started, I just went and rode a bike. I mean, this was 30 years ago. I had no concept or no knowledge or not even a thought process of how to pedal my bike. And I was the typical beginner athlete that used to ride in the biggest gear and the very low cadence, and my legs would be dead and my heart and lungs would feel great. So there's a few things I want to talk about with cadence, high cadences. Generally, when you ride high cadence, that's going to increase your heart rate and your breathing rate. And when you're doing low cadence, that's going to be more musculature and it's going to fatigue your muscles before it fatigues your heart and lungs. And so to answer specifically your question, a high cadence is going to build more endurance, whereas low cadence is going to build more strength if done at the proper intensity range. So when you're doing cadence drills, you also want to take into account what your rate of perceived effort was, what your heart rate was, what your power was, what your pace was, to really help determine, was it building more endurance and strength, as well as endurance and strength go hand in hand. As you're building endurance, you're building strength. As you're building strength, you're building endurance.
Mm-hmm. I just did a quick little Google search, benefits of high cadence bike drills. And obviously, and I knew this, I just wanted to have it, written out here. It reduces the stress that's placed on your leg muscles, which allows you to ride for a longer period of time before you, quote, crack. Second, it allows you to save your legs for the near term. For example, if you're doing a 3-day stage race, then pedaling at a higher cadence can keep your legs fresher for the duration. So high cadence in a long distance triathlon, you're saving them for the run. And you're also, with a high cadence, you're simulating almost the same similar turnover that you'll have on the run. So if you can do a maintain at 85 to 90, hopefully your run cadence is similar. So when you get off the bike, you kind of have the same feel to it.
Exactly. And in the real world of racing or just riding outside, it's going to vary all over the place depending on the terrain. So in general, most triathletes are going to race at a 75 to 85 RPM range over the course of their triathlon, even a sprint up to an Ironman. And so it's important to do very low cadence ranges, those 50 to 60 RPMs, to build that strength and to get comfortable with riding uphill. And due to the nature of riding into the wind or uphill, you're probably going to find yourself in that range during an event, as well as doing super high cadence drills, like over 100 RPMs, to understand what happens to your heart and lungs, as well as power at over range of that 75 to 85 cadence range. And so when you mix it up, you just start to learn more about your body and how it's adapting. Maybe you find that 90 to 100 is more efficient for you because that's where you produce the most power at less effort, whereas someone else may find that 70 to 75 RPMs, they produce the most power at less effort. So there's a lot of factors involved in determining what's efficient for you, but specifically that article and we just talked about, a higher cadence is going to develop more endurance.
Yeah, it's tough to find that sweet spot, but you'll find it eventually and look at your data and go, where was my average cadence for this distance and for that distance? Mm-hmm. What I find for me is that over time, I figured this out. When climbing, it all depends on where I am on the climb and what I'm trying to accomplish on the climb and how long it is I'm going to go a higher cadence to avoid the extra fatigue on my quads and my calves and my hamstrings. And you'll hear this term. As a listener, you'll hear this term of lighting the matches. You only have so many matches in your matchbox that if you go too hard, there goes a match. And by the time at the end, you need to have some matches in your box in order to have something left to run on. And so I'll high cadence and it's high, do a high cadence on some of these hills just to avoid the potential for a cramp, you know, for over stressing the legs on those climbs. Whereas you could just get out of the saddle and climb it and beat everybody, but I'd rather go a little less on the power, high cadence, save my legs, and then on the flats, I catch up to that person who was crushing it on the hill. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, they're in the dust, or, you know, I see them on the way back on the run, you know. But it's finding that sweet spot, what works for you. And, you know, some people believe in that big hot, big gears, but there's a trade-off on burning the match. You don't have much left. And, and speed in some cases. Next question. This one from Susan. Oh, this is a great one. I love this question. A lot of people have a hard time training for hills because of where they live. How would you recommend people train for the hills on the bike and run if you don't have hills where you live?
Well, this kind of ties in with the question we just answered. Doing big gear drills, whether it's indoors or outdoors, put your gear in a big gear so you're, you know, your cadence is in that 50, 60 up to 70 RPM range. So you can simulate a hill at the right intensity. So, you know, when I like to have athletes do these, I like to start them at a moderate zone 3 RPE 6 to 7. And then as they get closer to their events, I like to bump up, the, you know, keep the RPMs the same and put them in more of a zone 4 RPE 8 to 9. And that the duration of these big gear intervals will start lower duration, and then they'll build with time and they'll build with intensity over the nature of the training plan. And then if you're running, if you have access to a treadmill, I like to keep the treadmill incline at about 4 to 6% to start with, and, you know, start at a slower speed than you think you should, because knowing someone like me, you know, this happened like 25 years ago, but one time I was running on an incline and I was trying to run like a speed workout on an incline and I got injured. I think it was my hip flexor or my groin area. And I was injured for a long time because of that. And I know I specifically got injured during that run and I had to stop because I wasn't familiar with what my speed would have been on that incline if I was doing it outside. So it's important to be very careful as you start these low cadence drills. You don't want to wreck your knees. You don't want to wreck any musculature. You want to start with small volume, lower intensity, and build up to it. But I think those are the two main things you can do. And maybe if you can find a hill, like on a golf course, if you live in a flat area, maybe you live near a golf course that might have some hilly terrain built into it, or an overpass, getting onto the highway, you know, those overpasses. Maybe you're just going to have to travel a little ways and find some hills if that's what your goal is to incorporate hill training into your training plan.
Yeah, if you live in a super flat area, which there's got to be some sort of incline somewhere, but do repeats. I know you do that near your house. You just do hill repeats.
Yeah.
If you don't have a very long hill to work with.
Yeah, I love hill repeats.
For treadmill advice, almost always have an incline on your treadmill when you're running to simulate kind of gravity, because a flat one, you're a hamster. Give it a 1.5 to 2%, I say, when running, so you have a little bit of resistance, and then, you know, play with it when you want to practice some hills. But if you go with no resistance or no incline, of course you can run 7 minute miles. It's, you're just keeping up with the belt, I think.
Yeah.
Last question here for this podcast. We're looking from, this is from Kathy. And this is a smart question too. And this winter, she's wanting to add a couple of days of strength training to her plan. And she's looking for advice on how to add it to her current triathlon training volume. She's wondering, will adding this extra workouts devalue the gain she's making in triathlon training? And will it take away from some of the strengths and gains she can make in other areas? Like, for example, on the bike, she's maybe adding too much weight training and she can't put enough time toward her bike.
All right. This is a great question. I think a lot of athletes struggle with it, especially triathletes who tend to prioritize their swim, bike, and run training and don't understand the value of strength training. So I'm going to assume that she kind of admitted that she was going to decrease some cycling volume to add in this strength training. And I think it's important when you are adding a new activity into a certain training plan that it's good to do unless it's going to put you over the edge and it's going to be too much. So it's good to kind of evaluate. If you're going to add something, then you're going to take away something else. And I will use my recent experience with, and I've been a strength trainer pretty much my whole triathlon career, but what I did for my most recent ultra run is I actually, over the last 3 months, decreased my run volume and I really bumped up my leg strengthening program and overall strength training in general, but my run mileage decreased. And I was a little hesitant. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's a good thing to do because I'm about to run a distance more than 26 miles. It was a 40 miler and it worked. I mean, I felt great. My legs weren't as fatigued as they usually get. I felt a lot stronger running downhill. And so the benefits for me and decreasing my endurance training to add the strength training, I just proved to myself that it works. Even though the data out there says it works, it's still a little unclear for an endurance athlete and how much strength you do. I think as an endurance athlete, it's important to lift heavy because you are getting your endurance training in your primary sport. So when you strength train, you should lift heavy. But before you lift heavy, you want to make sure you're able to execute the movements correctly. Execution comes first. Doing a shorter phase of higher reps, lower weight to make sure your form is correct before you start piling on heavier weight, lower reps. And now when I'm saying lower reps, I'm in that, you know, 6 to 8 rep range that your maximum exertion is rep 7 and 8, and you might be able to do 9 or 10, but you really can't because you picked a weight that is going to maximize those strength gains. And it's really a lot more difficult when you are doing heavy strength training. You do feel so much more fatigued in biking and running, but the benefits of it should pay off and you shouldn't lose any gains, which I'm not sure what gains you've had on the bike. You should still be strong on the bike.
Do you know what percentage roughly you decreased your running volume and added the strength training for this ultra run?
Well, okay. To be fair, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, so it's a little bit different for me to be able to decrease my running miles. Cause I have I have 30 years worth of running miles, but I'd say 30%.
Okay. That's significant.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did Ironman Florida in November. So I kind of rested in November and started training in December and January for this 40-mile race that I just did. And so, you know, there's a lot of factors that had happened, but my running for the last 2 months has been maybe 30 miles a week. And I just ran 40 miles in one day.
Yeah.
And so that was my goal, though. My goal, because I trained for a 50-miler May of 2021, during that 50 miler, I cut back on strength training to increase mileage. And it just kind of felt like it didn't work like I thought it was going to work. Like I fell apart during that event. And the elevation gain was very similar in both of these events. The location was the same. We were in the same type of mountains. And I just felt so much better. My legs just felt stronger, you know, and I still do a lot of hip mobility and core stability movements, but doing heavy squats, I did deadlifts for the first time, but I think because my execution has always been off and I finally learned proper execution, that it just seemed to be like, okay, I was on the right track and I did the right thing. And I'm more confident going into my race in 2 months.
Yeah. I would suspect that you're able to lean on your confidence from doing longer runs in the past, that you can lower it, your volume, and that strength training will kick in when your legs are fatigued for those later miles. So, and you said maybe the 50 miler, you wish you had a little more strength in them.
Yes.
It's also 50 miles.
Yeah. I mean, it's also 50 miles, but the way I fell apart in that 50 miler, my knees hurt, my quads, like it's almost like my quads just stopped firing. They were so fatigued. I could barely walk up and down. I could barely walk.
Well, that's extreme too. 50.
And I know it's extreme, but my mileage was high. I didn't think that would happen because due to my higher mileage. So again, my mileage was lower, but I just came off a season of having a good season. So it really is dependent on each person, but I do want to stress that I would say go for it. Add the 2 to 3 days a week of strength training, lower your run or lower your bike or lower your swim volume, whatever you decide works best for you. Mm-hmm. Give it a try. Keep log notes of how you're feeling. Keep log notes of what you're doing in the weight room as far as volume, reps, sets, movements, and then do your next event. And then you go back and you assess, okay, did it work or didn't work? And you want to know what you're looking about. What does it mean? Do you feel like the strength training helped? Do you feel like it didn't? You know, there's a lot of factors involved in that. But if you have a coach, discuss it with your coach. Or, you know, if you're in a Facebook group, or you can discuss this with someone, send us an email. Send us more information.
Okay. Well, that wraps up our questions this week. You can always leave a question inside the T2 Endurance Group on Facebook. Email us anywhere. Wendy
I have two emails. I have Wendy at T2Coaching.com and I have T2CoachWendy@gmail.com.
Okay, there you go. Or if you want to find us on social elsewhere, on Facebook, Endurance Hour, or on Instagram, you can leave messages there and we'll find them and then add them to the questions list for the next episode of the podcast. Before Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening this week. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Adios.